I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. There are some close and closely watched congressional races as Democrats work to bring back the House or win back the House of Representatives this year. The one for Pennsylvania's 1st congressional district, which includes Bucks County and a sliver of Montgomery County, is in the crosshairs. Incumbent Republican Brian Fitzpatrick is being challenged by Democrat Scott Wallace. And in other counties, including ones around Philadelphia, a number of women are campaigning to break into the all-male Pennsylvania delegation to the U.S. House. Senator Bob Casey is running for a third term in Pennsylvania and is being challenged by Congressman Lou Barletta, whom President Trump personally tapped to run and who trails Casey by double digits. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf has an even bigger lead over his challenger, former Pennsylvania State Senator Scott Wagner. And over in New Jersey, Senator Bob Menendez has a fight on his hands with his Republican businessman opponent Bob Hugin, and things have been rough in New Jersey's 3rd congressional district with incumbent Tom MacArthur fending off a challenge from Democrat Andy Kim. Well, those are just highlights from just a few of the local and statewide races in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, our topic for today's Radio Times. And I have a question for you. What's the number one issue? What is the main reason that you are going to vote on Tuesday? And if you are not going to vote, we want to know why. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. I have three guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY, who writes the Campaign Countdown newsletter. Dave, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Glad to be here, Marty.
Holly Otterbein is with us as well, clout reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News. Holly, nice to have you back with us as well.
It's always a pleasure.
And rounding out our trio of guests, Joe Hernandez. He's WHYY reporter who covers South Jersey. And Joe, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks, Marty.
Feels like a consequential, enthusiastic, engaged, very, very competitive campaign, Dave. Have we been here before? In terms of just the kind of intense energy that one feels about the upcoming midterm?
You know, I think congressional elections always have important stakes. I don't recall a congressional election with quite this level of anticipation and tension about it. I think, you know, people out there, Democrats really want to send a message about the Trump administration, and the president's supporters and Republicans are just as determined to defend what they have. And so, yeah, I think this feels big.
And Holly, there are a number of races that are literally too close to call. I mean, they're just too much within the margin of error.
Yeah, absolutely. One that I've been paying close attention to is the Pennsylvania 1st District race in Bucks County. It features a moderate Republican who's running as a centrist, Brian Fitzpatrick. He's the incumbent. And Democratic challenger Scott Wallace, who is a multimillionaire philanthropist. And a recent poll by the New York Times showed that it was one percentage point of difference that Fitzpatrick was ahead by. So people keep asking me, who do I think will win? And I keep telling them I have a boring answer. I think it's truly a toss-up.
And we should add that this is a county that has gone Republican and then it's gone Democrat and Republican and Democrat. So not unusual that it toggles back and forth. Joe, what's the mood in New Jersey?
I would say much the same. You can really feel the long tail of the Trump election in New Jersey. In many of the races, people talk about Trump and wanting to stand up to Trump and guiding their vote that way, not toward a candidate for the candidate's position, but for the fact that the candidate will stand up to Trump.
And how about for you, Dave, going back to Pennsylvania, Trump did win this state. He beat Hillary Clinton, a number of candidates that he supports. He is barnstorming between now and Tuesday, but not in Pennsylvania. Why do you think?
Well, he makes decisions about, going places where you can make a difference. And I think you see this also in the spending by national Republican and Democratic groups. There are lots of races in which they don't spend a penny. And then in places like the one that Holly mentioned in Bucks County, they are going all in. I just checked today that's total spending in that race now between the first district in Bucks County. Total spending now between the candidates and the super PACs is over $28 million, which is more than been spent in the U.S. Senate race here. So if you're in that district and you haven't heard something nasty about both of these guys, you're not paying attention. It's been really ugly. I have to say, covered elections for a long time, and they're always nasty. But the tone of this stuff, just I really feel like I need a long shower after spending some time in this.
Both sides have gotten called out for running misleading ads.
Right.
I mean, they've been really, really gross.
Worse than other races, you think, in terms of its pure nastiness, Dave?
You know, it's always the one in the moment is always the one you feel. But like, if you take the race between Brian Fitzpatrick and Scott Wallace, the National Republican Congressional Committee has run ads in which they accuse Wallace of truly believing that police are smarter than police officers, based on some pretty that dogs are smarter than police officers, based on some pretty thin backup, really.
And then, I don't even know what that argument would be, but nonetheless,
well, it's based on something that some anonymous person supposedly recorded of Wallace, a little snippet that was played. And also that he believes that people who have more than two children should be taxed for irresponsible breeding. And they were called out on this in a fact check, and they just ran it again in a different ad. I mean, there's just almost no standards now. As Holly noted, I mean, an ad for the Democrat, Wallace, was tagged, but that was about a policy issue and an interpretation of votes in Congress. These particularly personal attacks are just really dispiriting. My sense is that both of those are pretty decent people. Hmm. I don't think there's any serious question about their personal integrity, but you wouldn't know that from watching television.
Well, here's something from a debate last week, a bit more tame than what we've been talking about. This is, first we've got Democratic candidate for the 1st Congressional District, Scott Wallace, then Republican incumbent Brian Fitzpatrick, talking about the Republican tax plan.
I think it was utterly irresponsible to vote for the tax bill, which exploded our debt by $2 trillion. I say make the rich pay their fair share.
We needed to do something to jumpstart this economy, and everybody is benefiting. 3.7 unemployment rate, walk down Mill Street in Bristol Borough, 58 storefronts or so, there's 3 vacancies. Help wanted signs in every other store. That's economic growth. That's what we needed to do.
And that's a clip from a debate last week. Joe, let me go over to you, because the tax bill, the tax cut, that has been a big issue in New Jersey.
Yes. I mean, in the two biggest races, probably in the Senate race in the 3rd District, which is in South Jersey, the tax cut has played a role, not as much in the Senate race because Bob Hugin is a political newcomer. He doesn't really have a record to examine on this. But Tom MacArthur, the Republican in the 3rd District, was the only congressman in New Jersey, Democrat or Republican, to vote yes on the tax bill. And he's been taking a ton of heat for his vote on this from Democrats and even from some Republicans who point to studies that say the tax bill is going to hit New Jersey the hardest, that this new cap on state and local tax deductions means people in New Jersey who pay high property taxes, which is pretty much everybody, when they exceed this cap, that they're going to be paying federal taxes on their property taxes. So MacArthur's been taking a lot of heat for that, but he also has been arguing that there are a lot of people more than half of the people in the district would, without getting into the weeds too much here, take the standard deduction, which is doubling. So it's kind of a two-sided argument in this district, which is also very two-sided. You have the wealthier Democratic side in Burlington County and the less wealthy Republican side in Ocean County. So it's unclear how it's playing out, but it's hugely important in the district.
You know, the interesting thing to me this is that that's a toss-up race in New Jersey where you have the incumbent Republican who's kind of allied himself with the Trump administration, at least on policy issues, where in the case of Fitzpatrick, the Republican in Bucks County, I mean, he has truly cast himself as an independent. He's kind of kept his distance from Trump. Does MacArthur – what does he say about Trump apart from the tax plan?
I mean, if he were here, he would say that he's bipartisan and that he's not a Trump Republican. And it just so happens that in the last 2 years, he's allied himself with Trump on two of Trump's biggest policy issues, which are the tax bill and the Obamacare repeal bill. So people are pointing to those issues and saying, you know, you say you're not a Trump Republican, but you voted in favor of these two huge policy changes that Trump wanted. On the other hand, he says he's more bipartisan. It's a tricky district, I think, because he doesn't want to come out in Burlington County and say, yeah, I'm a Trump Republican. I support the president on everything. Then again, in Ocean County, something like that would play better. So I think he's walking the line a little bit.
It is really interesting, too, because Fitzpatrick and MacArthur have really different records. But as someone who's been paying close attention to the Fitzpatrick district race, I've been struck by how similar of campaigns they're sort of running. Like, if you watch MacArthur's ads, he really stresses that he's very bipartisan. He actually even references the same bipartisan index that was done by the Lugar Center that Fitzpatrick often references. So it's kind of like a similar playbook in a similar kind of district that's really, you know, split and kind of swings both ways.
And Holly, people who live in the first congressional district should know about Fitzpatrick. He did vote against the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, right?
He did, yes. And that's not the only time that he sided with Democrats. He also did not sign on to a lawsuit that sought to overturn Pennsylvania's new congressional district map. He was, I believe, the only elected Republican in Pennsylvania who did not do that. He voted against a bill to oppose a carbon tax. There are a number of different issues that he can cite. So he definitely has, I think, a stronger argument to make that he's a moderate. Of course, one of the things that we'll find out on Election Day is whether or not voters in Bucks County believe that anyone in the Republican Party at this point is a moderate. Can you be a moderate today when Trump is at the head of the GOP?
In fact, a comment from Warren says, I will vote primarily as a no vote against Trump. I don't want to enable him in any way and hopefully slow him down. Dave, do you think that's a common refrain probably among Democrats, but nonetheless, that Trump, and he has said this about himself, that this race in many ways is a referendum on him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think you see it in polling and in our conversations with voters. I mean, pretty soon when you get down to it, I mean, they may talk about health care or taxes or jobs, but really what it comes down to is I can't stand the other side. They've lost their minds and have to be stopped. And what's interesting, you know, and I was listening to Holly talk and Joe about the messaging. I think what the candidates and the independent groups are doing is, I mean, they want to rally their base and give them the kind of red meat. But then there is some band of voters who are persuadable. And for those, you want to, in Bucks County, you want to say, Brian Fitzpatrick is one of your guys. I mean, he cares about his community. He's going to assess every issue independently, and maybe that wins some. And then there are a few issues, like I think particularly for the Democrats, for health care, where I think they think they've got the better argument that they're on the side of fairness and compassion. You can clearly see that in their messaging. And you can, I think you can tell it's working to some extent because the Republicans have embraced it too now. They're all about
saying
that they will protect people with pre-existing conditions. When you get into the details, it's a little fuzzier than that, but that's clearly a message.
Let me just quickly reintroduce everybody. That's Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY, and you should check out his campaign countdown newsletter, counting down, of course, to the midterms. Holly Otterbein, clout reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News, philly.org, and Joe Hernandez, WHYY reporter covering South Jersey. And we're all getting a primer on what's going to happen or what could happen on Tuesday, of course, the midterm elections. And again, we want to hear from you specifically about the issues that matter to you or the issue that will take you to the polls. 1-888-477-9499, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And in this very fraught environment, if you're not going to vote, we really want to know why as well. So stay with us. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, and we are talking about some of the more interesting, more contentious, more hotly contested races. And, of course, Election Day is on Tuesday, an interesting race for the U.S. Senate here in Pennsylvania. Let me play a clip from incumbent Democratic Senator Bob Casey speaking to Dave Davies about Roe v. Wade, and we should say that he is a anti-abortion Democrat, an unusual person in the Democratic Party.
I have never agreed with Roe. At the same time, you have to decide, what do we do about this debate? Do we continue the way the debate has gone on for decades, or do we figure out a place to land which is common ground? The common ground here is both sides, despite the disagreement on the issue, both sides agree that we should reduce the number of unwanted pregnancies. Both sides should want to agree on that. Both sides agree we should reduce the number of abortions. What we don't focus on enough is what's the common ground. The common ground is family planning. and contraception. If there's more of that, if it's more widely available, you're going to reduce both the abortion rate and the number of unwanted pregnancies.
Let me play one more clip, and this is Lou Barletta, Casey's Republican challenger, speaking at a debate on October 26th.
I think we can all agree nobody wants to see what we saw down at the border with children and parents being separated. So the best way to stop that is not to let it happen in the first place, which this is a failure of Washington. I was a mayor that actually had to stand up before anyone else in the country to try to do something about illegal immigration because Washington wouldn't do anything. And what we're seeing, the caravan, this invasion that we're seeing right now that's growing every day, if you don't like those pictures and the Democrats and Senator Casey and Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi get back in, you better get used to it.
And we should add that he was the mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, Dave Davies. What are your thoughts about this particular race?
Well, he hit every buzzword there.
He sure did.
Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer,
right.
Invasion.
All the boogie people.
Lou Barletta is a Trump conservative, and he did make a national name for himself when he was the mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania in 2006 with a proposal to penalize landlords and employers who hire or rent to undocumented workers. Those are his principles, and he stands by them. And I think there is some appeal to it. And, you know, as we see the president whipping up a lot of enthusiasm, fear, depending on your perspective, about the caravan in Central America, you know, I think people like Lou Barletta think, you know, people are going to perceive a real threat and that the laws have allowed people to get away with anything and come in and make, you know, bogus claims of asylum and then get released and then not show up for hearings. I mean, I think, you know, immigration activists will give you a whole different take on all of that, obviously. But it's an issue they think they can run with.
And Casey is well ahead, a well-known name. Holly in Pennsylvania is his father was governor. This is his third run. He is a conservative Democrat. There aren't too many of those.
I'd say, I don't know about that. I think that he started off as a pro-life, pro-gun Democrat and has, I think by any fair measure, moved to the center, if not to the more liberal side of things. And has also, you know, had a really active role on social media in the last couple of years under President Trump, kind of driving out the resistance base. We call him Woke Casey now in the newsroom.
Oh, you do? Okay.
His new sort of persona.
I did not know that.
But no, the Barletta Casey race is really fascinating because, you know, here we are in a state that Trump won, and yet Barletta is down so far. And I think that both the governor's race here and the Senate race kind of point to the limits of Trumpism. And so in the Senate race, you have someone who more than a third of voters right now, according to the latest poll, don't know enough about Barletta to have an opinion on him. To me, that says that, you know, not everyone is Trump. Not everyone can just get a bunch of free airtime and help self-fund their own race and therefore be able to get the electorate to know who you are, even if you have very similar anti-immigration views as Trump, as Barletta does, which I think definitely have an appeal in Pennsylvania. I think that's a big part of why Trump won. On the governor's race, Scott Wagner, of course, got a ton of attention recently, national attention, for saying that he was going to stomp on Governor Wolf's face with golf cleats. I'm paraphrasing here. And I think that shows the limits of Trumpism because, you know, Wagner sort of thought that, oh, all the rules were out for everyone. Well, no, they're just the normal rules are out for one guy, Trump. But I think it still affects other candidates. And you saw in the same poll, the Franklin and Marshall poll I just referenced, that his unfavorability rating had gone up after national scandal.
And we will play that. But I want to first get you, Joe, back in the conversation because I do want to ask you about the Menendez race in New Jersey again. Incumbent Democrat running for reelection, running for his life.
Surprisingly close. I don't think Menendez or Democrats in New Jersey would, a few years ago, have expected Menendez to have the challenge that he's having this year. And, you know, due in large part, obviously, to his federal corruption trial last year. He was the trial ended in a mistrial, so he was not found guilty of any of the bribery, corruption, conspiracy charges that the Justice Department lodged against him. But it clearly left a bad taste in everyone's mouth in New Jersey, or at least many people. He He ran against an unknown challenger in the primary, and she got about 40% of the vote, which many people read as a sign to Menendez. I should also note that he hasn't been down in a single poll yet. He hasn't been losing in a single poll. There have been a few that showed him and Republican challenger Bob Hugin tied, and there have been others that showed Menendez in the lead. It's just not the kind of blowout lead that you would expect in a statewide race in New Jersey, which is typically very blue, votes Democratic.
So now, he's popular, but also seen in a negative light?
I wouldn't say popular. I don't think that he's popular. I think that many people are going to hold their noses and vote for him because they see him as a check on Trump. He's been pretty out there in public against Trump, and Hugin has some ties to Trump and donated $100,000 to Trump's election campaign. So Menendez will, I think, get reelected if he does, in spite of everything that's transpired.
Dave, it looks like you wanted to say something.
I don't think many elected officials would survive what has happened to Bob Menendez. I mean, remember, he was not acquitted of these charges.
No,
I mean,
hung jury.
The facts were not really in dispute, that there were favors done for a close friend and for which he got a lot of very expensive gifts. And, when Shaka Fatah, the congressman here, ran for reelection, he had not been convicted. He was under indictment, and he was defeated. I mean, I don't think this is the kind of thing that voters have a lot of stomach for. I think it's a measure of the intense partisan divide in the country that a lot of people want to keep a Democrat in the Senate.
And the Hugin campaign has been it has been a steady barrage of ads reminding voters about the charges, about every particular of the case, about the fact that he was charged by Obama's Justice Department for months. Hugin got in really early. He's wealthy. He's self-funding. And he got in early with those ads and kept them up throughout the campaign.
That's Joe Hernandez, who joins us along with Holly Otterbein and Dave Davies, talking about some of the key and important and fascinating races here in Pennsylvania and in New Jersey. Let me get Mary from Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. And Mary, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. You asked for people's priorities about what is most important about this election.
Yep.
To me, what's most important is the issue of climate change. It's, as far as I'm concerned, it is the number one big issue, and the Republicans are not going to deal with it. At best, they're trying to hide their heads in the sand from it. At worst, they're cynically manipulating the energy issue for big bucks, and they don't care about the long-term consequences.
Well, Mary, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Holly, has that been an issue in any of these races we've been talking about?
Yeah, it's really interesting that Mary brings this up, because I think across the country, although, we saw this really scary UN report recently that said that we only have a very short period of time to deal with climate change, very, very, very few congressional candidates have made this a major issue. I will say in the Bucks County race, Scott Wallace has sort of made it an issue, certainly more so than a lot of other congressional candidates in the nation. You'll see on some of his mailings, he references, a goal or a promise of fighting climate change. He runs a family foundation that has given a lot of grants to groups that seek to fight climate change. So it's a little bit of an issue in that race, but overall in the country, it's really not an Of course, a lot of Democrats, I think, like Mary, or I don't know if Mary's a Democrat, but a lot of people take issue with that.
Mary, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. You can call as well, 1-888-477-9499. And finding out about the key issue that will make you go to the polls. And again, if you're not voting, we're really curious about why. Let me read what David said. He said, I've waited 2 years for this moment. Since November 2016, we've started hundreds of resistance groups with thousands of volunteers that have educated their respective communities. We are ready for this moment. Dave, let me ask you a bit about Pennsylvania Governor Wolf and his race with Wagner. And we referenced this earlier, but Wolf is way ahead. There was one debate hosted by Alex Trebek.
Right.
Of all people.
It was bizarre.
So maybe featuring Alex Trebek?
The York Daily Record did this thing where they actually analyzed how much time each person spoke, and it was Trebek by far above either candidate. And Wolf the least.
How did that happen? Wolf the least.
I mean, Wolf in some respects has been kind of like the family that leaves the house dark on Halloween evening. They don't want you to, he doesn't want to really participate in this election any more than he has to. But He has had a ton of money. I mean, in the last campaign finance report, he outspent Wagner nearly 4-1. He had six times as much money left in the bank for the last 2 weeks in the campaign. And so that just and you know, he is a decent and likable man and comes across well. And he is a terrific media consultant in Saul Short, who knows how to package that. You know, it's interesting. If you had spent a lot of time in the state capitol, I mean, you might kind of look at Wolf's term and think, this has been kind of a nightmare in some ways. I mean, he proposed a big tax plan that kind of went nowhere, and then the first two budgets went way, way, way over deadline, and he didn't actually sign it. He just let it become law without his signature. But, you know, people, most voters don't follow that stuff. And, you know, the state's kind of rumbling along, and terrible things haven't happened, and he is a nice guy. And he's running against, you know, a fellow who is an interesting character, Scott Wagner, kind of, you know, bull rushed his way into the party by winning a write-in, is an interesting guy, but just is not that right. Well known. It's a big state, and it takes a lot of effort to become known.
Well, let me play the clip that Holly referenced. This is Scott Wagner with a Facebook Live campaign video.
Between now and November 6th, you better put a catcher's mask on your face, because I'm going to stomp all over your face with golf spikes, because I'm going to win this for the state of Pennsylvania, and we're throwing you out of office.
Hard to know what to say when you I saw it.
Well, he doesn't know much about golf.
We were having a very interesting golf conversation before going on the air.
Go ahead, golf courses now permit only soft spikes. Okay. Soft spikes, these little rubber things.
Radio Times is now a golf fact-checking
apparently,
operation.
Apparently, yes, exactly. Yeah, these are important these facts, claims,
though. Yeah. What's funny, I'm interested in your take on this, Holly, because, I mean, he sounds totally unhinged in that clip. And once in a while he does. Most of the time I've been around him, he actually sounds like a pretty reasonable person. And you kind of – and what's fascinating to me about him is that he comes to this from the perspective of a business person who resents the taxes and regulations that government imposes. But as he has gotten into government, he's had to learn about policy issues he's never discovered before. And he says things out loud, like maybe we should tax seniors' retirement income, which has been used against him. And I have to say – I've generally found him a likable fellow when I've spoken to him, you know, a half dozen times. But clearly there is a volatile side. Not somebody who should be allowed to do a Facebook Live.
Yeah. Holly, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah. I mean, I think I agree with you. Most of the time when you sit down with him, he seems like a perfectly staid person. You know, there are potential temper issues there. There was a physical altercation that he had with a campaign tracker. Years ago, his daughter also took a protection from abuse order out against him. So, you know, I think that there's a little bit of an anger issue there potentially that drives things like that. And I also think that, you know, he might have put out that video to just get attention. I mean, again, we've seen Trump do this to great effect. It really worked for him. But there are limits to that because, you know, Trump is a person who had been known for decades by Americans and who had been on their TV sets, right? And was somebody that people knew and liked. Scott Wagner is not that person. To a lot of people, this was perhaps the first time they'd ever even heard of him, right? For people just tuning into the gubernatorial race.
And it certainly got national attention. Well, let's talk about some of the women who are running in Pennsylvania. And we should add, Dave, is that the delegation, the Pennsylvania delegation to the House, is all male?
Strictly dudes.
Strictly dudes, representing
and
Pennsylvania.
And has been since Alison Schwartz left in 2014.
Right. So what do you see in the horizon?
Oh, this is in some respects the biggest and quietest story of the general election, is that very likely we will have four women, all Democrats, who will go to Washington to represent Pennsylvania in Congress. And it's been quiet because they're basically running in pretty non-competitive races. So it hasn't gotten a ton of coverage. Yeah. But, yeah, they're going to – it's going to change things.
And how much do you think redistricting has changed things in Pennsylvania? I mean, certainly there are some newly redrawn districts. Has that
– completely.
I mean, has that really turned things up?
I mean, it's a seismic event. I mean, it took districts that were – I mean, there's – to be honest about it, I mean, there's – any objective observer would say that the map was gerrymandered pretty radically for Republicans, and the new districts, some might say, kind of tilted things the Democratic way a bit. There are certainly the new districts are more compact and contiguous, but there's no doubt that they open up a lot of opportunities for Democrats. You know, the other thing just to say about this is that you know, this is a big national election, but, you know, politics are local in some ways. And one of the reasons that those races are not competitive is that you had several departures of well-liked Republican incumbents. You know, there was Pat Meehan, who had the woman on his staff who he saw as a soulmate and then who filed a sexual harassment claim. He's gone. Ryan Costello left and would have been a competitive district, but he left, and he left in such a way that handcuffed his party. He filed to run for re-election so that no other powerful Republican did, then got out, leaving only one guy, Greg McCauley, who really had no experience, no backing, and so that becomes a Democratic walk in a race that should be competitive. Charlie Dent, the moderate Republican from the Lehigh Valley, leaves, and I think all that figures in, too. And you got a thing like that in Jersey, too,
sure.
Right? With the old Lobiondo seat, right, Joe?
Right. There's a few longtime Republicans in Jersey are leaving. Rodney Frelinghuysen is leaving in the 11th district, so that's a competitive race. But also, yeah, in South Jersey, Frank Lobiondo, he's been in Congress over two decades, and he is leaving, and that seat is almost certainly going to flip from Republican to Democrat.
And a common thread between Lobiondo and Dent and Costello is that these were all Republicans that were seen as moderates, you know, not running for reelection in the Trump era.
And there's one district where people actually get to vote twice, right, Dave?
Two.
two districts.
This is a little confusing.
It is. But we're almost up on a break, but go ahead.
In the case of the resignations of Meehan and Dent, in their terms, the law offers no discretion. You must have a special election to fill their term. So on next Tuesday, you'll have people voting in the new districts and then also in the old districts in special elections. And the candidates are the same, but it's kind of weird because it means, for example, that Mary Gay Scanlon, who's in Delaware County, if she wins both the special and the general, she's a second-term congresswoman in January. And Pearl Kim, her Republican opponent, if she wins the special, she'll spend a few weeks and can say forever that she's a former congresswoman. So.
Which could happen.
We're going to take a very short break and get back to our conversation. And do stay with us. Much more to talk about after this short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking about some of the races in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY. Check out his campaign countdown newsletter. Holly Otterbein, clout reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News. And Joe Hernandez, WHYY reporter covering South Jersey. Joe, I do want to get to you, but let me just read a couple of comments. We got a lot of people that want to join our conversation. Mona says, as a lifelong Republican in District 3, I'm voting against MacArthur. His actions on the Affordable Care Act, support for the fiscally irresponsible tax bill, and POTUS embarrass me. Jamie says, as a South Jersey resident, I'm exhausted with this election. The negativity has completely turned myself and my husband off, and we want no part of any of it! Exclamation point. Adam, environmental protection and promoting women's and LGBTQ rights are my main issue this election. Wolf, Fetterman, Casey, and Madeline Dean are my team for that. Joe, let me go back to you when we made a quick reference to the second congressional district in New Jersey. This is Jeff Van Drew and Seth Grossman.
Yeah.
They were our friends. Is that true?
I think at this point probably were is the better way of putting it. Yeah. So this was a seat long held by Frank Lobiondo, who we mentioned earlier, and Holly said, moderate Republican, widely seen as a moderate Republican. And this district is kind of a swing district. It is a huge, sprawling district in South Jersey. Because the population is kind of sparse down there. And he decided to retire this year. And in the primary election, we had on the Democratic side, Jeff Van Drew, who is a well-known state senator, well-known in the district and beyond. I'd say pretty well-liked. He's a dentist by trade and had the support of the Democratic Party down there. And the Republican primary was kind of interesting. It was kind of a toss-up. There were, I think, four candidates. None of them was a clear winner. The one guy who people expected to win actually didn't. So a guy named Seth Grossman won the primary there, an attorney, former local politician, and has become kind of this a bit strange, controversial figure down there. He said some things that have rubbed people the wrong way. Dave has talked to him personally and can attest to this, but he called diversity a bunch of crap. He has really not fully denied climate change, but walked right up to the edge of denying climate change. And so this race now, which was, you know, the seat was held by Republicans for so long, it could be competitive. It's definitely a swing district. It voted for Obama and then voted for Trump. But this is going to be a cakewalk for Jeff Van Drew now.
And most of the Republican parties have turned their back on Grossman, right?
The National Republican Party has basically shunned him for what he said about diversity.
He also said, I want to give Donald Trump a strong majority in Congress.
He's an extreme supporter of Donald Trump, you know, supports him. There was a debate recently, and Grossman brought up immigration often, and it showed up in polls that people in the district now think about immigration as an issue. There is a strong Latin American population down in the district, but it's definitely become, I think, more of an issue because Seth Grossman talks about it so often.
Interesting. Let me get Shane from Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. And Shane, go ahead, and thanks for your patience. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
I don't normally vote during the midterms, but I'm going to vote because of Trump, and I'm really against pretty much everything he's done. And so that's got me out to the polls this time.
Well, let me ask you, Shane, as you said, you're going to vote this year, but you normally don't vote in the midterms. Now, you have to explain why.
I feel like it's a lot of effort, and I normally vote during presidential elections because I feel like I get a better sort of return on investment for my time.
So you're not particularly interested in who represents you in Congress, for instance?
I am, but I'm extremely busy at work, so that sort of wins out.
But you're going to vote this year?
Absolutely.
Okay, I hear you. Thanks for calling into Radio Times. It does raise a question, Dave, and I'll put this to everybody, but certainly in Pennsylvania, we don't have early voting. I mean, there's absentee voting. Most people have to go and vote on a Tuesday. Not everyone gets that day off. Is it too hard to vote in Pennsylvania, Dave?
I don't think so. I mean, you can do it if you want to do it. I mean, I hate the term midterm elections. I try not to use it. Implicit in it is the idea is that the only elections that really count are the presidential elections. And then the midterms are kind of, they're the little elections. The elections that occur in odd number of years don't even have a name. That's when we elect mayors and council people who do these really important consequential things. And, you know, on even number of years, in odd number of years in New Jersey, you elect state officials. Our state legislators are the people who draw the congressional boundaries that kind of shape everything, and they decide rules for abortion clinics and taxes and all this really important stuff, and to kind of cast midterms like as if it's sort of the little election, it demeans it. No, this stuff matters.
We should
be out there.
Shane, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Holly, we haven't really talked about the Pennsylvania legislature. Obviously, there's some interesting legislative races going on, but broadly speaking, the Republicans have pretty firm control over the legislature. Do you see any big changes coming to Harrisburg?
Most analysts say that, if not all analysts, say that Republicans will keep control of the state House and the state Senate, barring some crazy thing that happens. That being said, I think even many Republicans believe that Democrats will pick up seats, particularly in southeastern Pennsylvania, where there's a lot of dissatisfaction with Trump, and people think that will be reflected down the ballot. Many of the surrounding counties around Philadelphia have also been trending left in recent years. And so Democrats think, you know, this is the year that they're going to really see the gains from that. And I think that makes sense. Very few people think that the Democrats have a chance of taking back the state house, although I hear a few young Democrats make that argument. But I think, you know, the likelihood of a pickup for Democrats of a few seats makes sense.
Yeah, this will be interesting to watch, I think. I mean, because there's in some cases they're going after, like, you know, established Republican incumbents like McGarrigle and in Delaware County. You know, and we'll see. We'll see. I mean, that'd be interesting to see if the youth vote really turns up in numbers as it did in Philadelphia in the primary last year and had a huge impact. I mean, you know, Tom Steyer, the billionaire hedge fund guy, his organization, Next Gen America, has put a lot of effort into registering and energizing young voters. Yeah. So that'll be interesting to me.
Fascinating.
To see.
Let me get Ernest from, looks like Bethlehem, to join us on Radio Times. Ernest, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, how are you?
Good.
The reason I was calling is, the pivotal issue for me is illegal immigration. And the reason for that is I'm in favor of immigration, but I feel like it could dismantle the rule of law if illegal immigration is allowed and certain groups of people are given a pass under the law. I would think that it would cause citizens of our country to say, well, what's our motivation for following the law? And it also is kind of a smack in the face for people who have legally immigrated here. So I think it has a potential to unravel some of the fabric of our society if it's allowed.
Well, Ernie,
and that's the reason I'm voting Republican.
Fair enough. I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and he speaks to the fact that we have not, as a country and as a Congress, been able to address the fact that there are millions of undocumented immigrants living in this country. Dave, we haven't figured out how to either absorb them or whether to kick them out. And, of course, there are, you know, the so-called caravans that are unfairly described as hordes of people coming into the country. But nonetheless, immigration and what to do about immigration is a unfixed problem.
Yeah, and you know, it's certainly legitimate to be concerned if you think that people are coming in and that there are no really effective checks on illegal immigration. I do think that when you're considering an issue like this or any issue, don't pay attention to what people say in political campaigns. Yes. They're not there to present facts as they are. They're there to manipulate and spin us. But I do think, yeah, I mean, there's a real debate about how to handle this. And I think, you know, and Congress got close to doing a kind of a bigger immigration bill a while back, then that fell apart.
Yep.
I think we need to kind of turn down the heat a little bit and look at some real smart solutions.
Let me read some more comments. Edward says, I've lived in Bucks County for 33 years, very active there, now in Pottstown. Just realized my new district isn't the fourth but the sixth. I'm still reeling from non-representation in this stupid decision as none of us had a say. I'm not going to vote for Wolf or Casey. And I think the redistricting or the redrawing of the map in Pennsylvania, Holly, has some people upset. The Supreme Court stepped in, Pennsylvania Supreme Court stepped in and redrew those boundaries.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of conservatives believe that, you know, a Democrat-controlled state Supreme Court just kind of decided these lines for them and that they're just as unfair as the previous map, if not more, in the view of some people. You know, the previous caller mentioned immigration as a key concern for him and the reason why he's voting. Obviously, President Trump has sought to make that a major campaign issue to drive out voters this midterm election. And, you know, it reminds me of one of the most fascinating things about this race to me is that it's not a typical wave election. People keep describing it as a potential blue wave, but wave elections are usually those elections in which the party in power is asleep, doesn't really turn out, and the party out of power is outraged and turns out in huge numbers. Well, Democrats and Republicans are both really interested in this election, so it makes it a little different.
Feel aggrieved.
Yeah, absolutely. 75% of those polled by Franklin and Marshall who were Republicans said they were very interested in the election Tuesday. 73% of Democrats said that.
So a lot of interest and engagement. Loretta says, I'm concerned about the entire Constitution, not just the Second Amendment, so I'm going to do something I've never done before, vote straight Democratic ticket. JB, I'm a New Jersey resident. Because of Trump, for the first time in my life, I will vote straight Democratic. We have about 10 emails I'm getting from John Aaron saying that climate change is the number one issue. Let me get TJ from Philadelphia to join our conversation. And TJ, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good. I actually started listening to your show within the last year, and I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
I'm actually going to be voting this year. I'm 36, and I've never voted. And I was going to vote in the presidential election, and I didn't. And I feel that I owe it to myself. I owe it to my children. I owe it to, you know, the millions of, you know, African Americans that, you know, fought for civil rights and, you know, for the opportunity to even go out and vote and, Yeah, I think that I need to make my voice heard this time around. So I'm definitely going to vote, and I'm going to vote Democratic because I do see a lot of hypocrisy and jumping back and forth between, you know, Republicans saying that, you know, they were against Obamacare, and then now all of a sudden they are for pre-existing conditions. And I think that's extremely misleading, and I'm upset that people really can't see that, you know, a lot of the things that are going on, they're backpedaling on a lot of their issues, you know, pre-existing, the tax bill that they put out, and, you know, all of a sudden they were for it, now they're not for it.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so
well, sounds like-
I just...
Sure. I mean, it sounds like you've done your homework and you want to vote and make your vote count. It took you a little time, but TJ, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Joe, anything you want to say?
I mean, it's just interesting that TJ brings up both the health care bill and the tax bill because these are two of Tom MacArthur's kind of hallmark votes. And I think that in some ways, Tom MacArthur, he's really been out there advocating for these policies. So you have to give him credit for that. He did a very kind of tense, lengthy town hall. I think it was last year now, in South Jersey over the healthcare bill. People yelled at him and screamed at him and argued with him, and he stayed for a while and took all those hits. But it is notable now because a lot of people are seeing those policies and seeing that they might not be what they had expected or had be what they thought that they were, and now they're going to, you know, make, you know, to send him a message about it.
The Republicans' tax cuts have also become a major issue in the Pennsylvania 1st District race. This is in Bucks County. Although Brian Fitzpatrick voted against repealing the Affordable Care Act, he voted for the tax cuts, as we had mentioned earlier, and his opponent, Scott Wallace, has just brought that up time and time and time again. It's kind of his best argument trying to tie Fitzpatrick, who's run a moderate campaign, to Trump, who is underwater in the district. And so it'll be interesting to see whether or not that works.
Yeah. Well, let me end on a lighter note. Leslie Odom Jr., who played Aaron Burr, is teaming up with Ben Pasek, who wrote Dear Evan Hansen and La La Land, are hopping on a bus, and they're going to go to a district outside of Harrisburg and also to the 1st District. They're not Oprah Winfrey, but they are there to obviously get
no
out the
Oprah.
Vote. No one is Oprah. We all know that. Dave, your thoughts.
I wasn't aware of that. There's a lot that's going on. Joe Biden's going to be in Luzerne County over the weekend. You know, I guess the one thing as we wrap things up, I would urge people when they have strong, passionate views to make an affirmative effort to learn something about the other side. We just spend too much time talking to and listening to media that give messages we already believe. Learn about what the other side thinks. I promise you it will make you a more informed voter.
Hear, hear.
And forget about the ads, Dave.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was succinct there. And that was Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY. I advise you to check out his campaign newsletter, counting down to the midterm election for next week. Holly Otterbein, clout reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News. Joe Hernandez, WHYY reporter covering South Jersey. My thanks to all three of you for joining us today on Radio Times. And coming into the studio. Always nice to have people here. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you for joining us.